Today is the start of Holy Week. In St. Matthew's, Holy Week involves services on Palm Sunday, Wednesday, Monday, Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday, and Easter Day. For most of the week, there will also be a candlelit labyrinth for people to come, walk, and contemplate within. Holy Week is, on the one hand, a quasi-reenactment of the events that allegedly happened around the time of Jesus' death in Palestine, 33 CE. And Christians for centuries have used this time to reflect on his life, death, and resurrection, and whether there are cosmic theological implications. On the other hand, there's also a long history of Christians using the events of Holy Week as a time to allegorically reflect on their own lives and the lives of their community. And it's in this vein that I speak this morning. On Palm Sunday, Jesus rode upon a donkey into Jerusalem to much acclaim. The crowd loved him, placed their hopes on him, and dreamt that he would liberate them. Jerusalem was the center of religious and political power. This was the place where the forces of oppression, which Jesus had criticized from the Galilean countryside, coalesced. If there was going to be any national change, it needed to change here. Sometimes we have to leave the comfort and security of the place we know, our Galilees, and travel to the center of power, our Jerusalems, to seek the change we hope for. We have to go there to be face to face and to risk our future. The risk averse never leave Galilee and will therefore never experience crucifixion or resurrection. They just stay at home, go to church, and pray that someone else will save them. There is a love that is welcome, and there's a love that's not. There's a love that is encouraged and affirmed, and there's a love that's disapproved of and punished. May we know and emulate the Jesus who risked all to pull down the walls separating the welcomed and the unwelcome, the walls dividing the accepted and the rejected. His was a bigger love that encompassed both. Jesus chose to ride into Jerusalem on a donkey. It looked rather silly. Not exactly the triumphant military adorned with armor riding a stallion look. Prior to entering the arena of the powerful, we need to consider our strengths and how we want to appear. The humble donkey was a symbol, both to the biblically literate and to the Roman elite. It symbolized that here was one who had no need for muscular might and the assumptions of the culture of violence. Here was one who was not afraid of being alone and seeming to be stupid. Here was one who trusted in a God foreign to the halls of power. The best argument doesn't usually win the day. The courts of the powerful listen to the language of power, both the cultivated and the raw kind. To enter as one who will not play the power game, who seeks to champion the unpopular, is it best to be a loser? Yet what can't be dismissed so easily is one's integrity. In the end, on the losing side of some Golgotha, all you have is your integrity. I suspect the acquittal of the Waihopai trio last week was due to their integrity rather than a clever lawyer. To truly love one person is to innately like all people, To truly care for one person is to be concerned for all people. A soul that is grounded in God is grounded in compassion. When people die in foreign conflicts, such a soul suffers. And such a soul must act no matter how foolish or futile it seems. Although Holy Week is filled with poignant exchanges, let's now jump forward to Thursday night. The powerful are elsewhere. Jesus is among friends. He takes bread and wine and likens it to his own life, broken and poured out. These elements are sustenance for the journey and a bond between us, his followers. In simple food, there is a simple grace, and in simple grace, there is a simple power. Jesus next takes a towel in the manner of a servant and washes the feet of his guests. Leadership is to be like this. In the end, none of us is greater or more worthy than anyone else, and therefore all are to be treated as special. The marginal and the mighty both get smelly feet. Both need help. Both can help each other, though one is not so used to bending. There is great potency in these rites of connection, mutuality, and equality. They summarize Jesus' hopes for his friends. Hope sees the deep truth that our difference does not define us, rather, our commonality does. We are brothers and sisters on the same planet. One's giftedness is less important than one's belonging. When we are home to one another, there is hope. That night, the betrayal happens. The Roman soldiers find Jesus and arrest him. He has disturbed the peace of the powerful and insecure long enough. Judas, who is paid 30 pieces of silver for a kiss, delivers it. After a show of bravado, the other disciples either flee into the night or surreptitiously tag along until noticed. It's Peter's cowardice that is highlighted. Brought before the authorities, it is the fawning crowd who seemingly only yesterday held palm branches, who now cry out that he should be crucified. When the opposition mounts, the applause and accolades of yesterday quickly evaporate. Likewise, the friendships and intimacies of yesterday. We are alone. It's then that you know what strength you have, what courage is in your soul. Sometimes when you think you are weak, your soul surprises you. It is at this place of aloneness that every little flicker of what could be support counts. From a man press-ganged into helping you, from a soldier who serves you vinegar, from a thief who suffers with you, from the distant watching and weeping figures of a handful of women. It makes you realize how powerful even a small, encouraging word is, and how often you have not given it. Only a few churches now, and none that I know of in this diocese, hold a vigil throughout Thursday night and into the morning. It's a time of aloneness, of nursing bruises, of darkness, of questioning, and having no one to answer. Hope is a very vulnerable thing. Easy prey for the powerful to squash. It's a little thing. It's glimpsed in every kindness and every green shoot. It's a fickle thing. Hope flickers in the breeze and is blown by the winds of darkness. Will it be relit? And who, save you and I, will light it? On Friday morning, Pilate asked the question, "Are you the King of the Jews?" For Jesus' Roman accusers, this is the nub of the matter. Forget all the religious palaver about sons of God and celestial seating arrangements. The nub is this worldly power. Kings and kingdoms matter. It's been convenient for Pilate's successors to locate Jesus' power in some off-the-earth heavenly realm. Yet Jesus was a threat to Pilate's patch. And despite some writers' wish to exonerate him of culpability, it was Pilate who ordered him killed. There's a power that seeks to control people, to bend their wills to ours or ours to theirs. In greater or lesser degrees, this is the power that continues to dominate in the higher echelons of politics and wealth, and that we in the lower echelons often seek to replicate. Yet there is another power, a power that seeks to make people free without needing or wanting the coercive methods of the former. It's a power of the heart. A kingdom that exists only to liberate others has no need of kings, hierarchy, and obeisance. For anyone concerned about control, this kingdom is to be feared. And so the story goes that on Friday at 3 p.m., Jesus died. At dawn on Sunday, some 39 hours later, his resurrection is said to have already occurred. God raised him from the dead. Whatever that means, it is grounded in his life and the events of his last week. Love, hope, and freedom always have a context.